Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas, and on this edition of the show, the Rocket Mortgage Classic kicks off this week at the beautiful Detroit Golf Club. Jason Langwell, the executive director of the Rocket Mortgage Classic, will stop by to give us the final details on this great Detroit event, including how to get tickets. June is Home Ownership Month, and Detroit Future City is celebrating. We'll talk with Shari Williams, the director of Equitable Neighborhood Planning at Detroit Future City, and she's got a lot of interesting information about how to buy a home. Justice Richard Bernstein was part of a press conference to introduce a new program for the elderly and disabled using autonomous vehicles in the city of Detroit. He'll join us to explain how this great program will work. And Bob Riney, president and CEO of Henry Ford Health, will tell us everyone was all smiles as Henry Ford Health and Michigan State University broke ground on the new Henry Ford Health and MSU Health Sciences Research Center. An interesting show about great things happening in and around the D, coming up right after these messages. Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas, and to kick off today's show, we welcome Jason Langwell, the executive director of the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Well, Jason, after all your hard work, the sixth Rocket Mortgage Classic is finally here. It's going to be a fantastic week of golf and fun in Detroit. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Well, Ann, I'm doing great. It's crunch time for us, right?
Yes.
We refer to this as advance week. The week before the event, we're up and raring to go. We've got our tournament ready to go Tuesday to Sunday next week, June 25th to the 30th, and we're excited. Tickets are flying off the shelf at rocketmortgageclassic.com. We're seeing really strong ticket sales. That moving the event the week before the 4th of July has seen more fans and more sponsors having even more interest, knowing they'll be in town, and we're set for what we think is going to be our best event yet.
So how does this work, Jason, with regard to tickets? Can fans buy tickets for the whole event from Thursday through Sunday, or individual, or both? What's the best way to do this to have the most fun?
Yeah, when fans go to rocketmortgageclassic.com, tickets start at just $75 early in the week, and they go up a little bit for later rounds. You can buy tickets on an individual daily basis, or you can buy tickets, throughout the entire week. You can buy grounds tickets. You can also buy elevated access into our hospitality structures. We have tickets starting at $125 into our Lending Tree Lounge, which is an elevated view of golf right behind the 16th hole. You can also buy tickets into Club Ace, which is a hospitality area behind the 15th green that includes, beverages. It has wine and beer and seltzers included in that ticket price. There's a wide variety of options. We do like to remind fans, though, that any ticketed adult can get into up to four youth, 15 and under, in for free. So one $75 ticket, you can bring out four youth 15 and under for free. So it's a really good value. And then on Tuesday and Wednesday, we have our community days presented by Jeep, where fans can get in for free. They can come out, watch our youth clinic on Tuesday. They can come and watch our Area 313 scramble on Tuesday, and then come back out on Wednesday and see our Delta Dental Pro-Am, and tons of great opportunities and tons of ticket selections options, but they're going fast, so fans need to get to rocketmortgageclassic.com quickly.
And Jason, I always think that Tuesday 313 scramble sounds like so much fun to watch. You've got some big names that come out for that.
We do. I think, and it's the most underrated event of the week. You have an opportunity to come out for the Area 313 Celebrity Scramble that's presented by our partners at Priority Health Total Health Foundation. We've got great celebrities. Aiden Hutchinson's going to be out there, Calvin Johnson, so we should see some Honolulu Blue out there this year. Speaking of blue, maybe a little Mazin Blue with Chris Webber in there. But we've got some for our Sparties too. Tom Izzo, the great Tom Izzo, will be back out trying to win his third consecutive Area 313 Celebrity Scramble title. The Miz, a WWE superstar, will be there. And then the Cavs shooting guard, Sam Merrill, is going to be out for the first time as well. So a great group of celebrities. And our top players, we have Ricky Fowler, Will Zalatoris, Tom Kim, Matt Kuchar, Minwoo Lee's coming for the first time and going to be playing in the Celebrity Scramble. So we've got a great group of professionals, a great group of celebrities to come out. And you get right up close and personal. They'll be signing autographs. And I encourage fans to come out for free to watch what is known as the best special event on the PGA Tour.
Jason Langwalt is with us. He's the executive director of the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Jason, you've already mentioned some big golf names. How is the player field shaping up?
It's shaping up great. Deepest field we've had to date in terms of top 100 players. We've got Cam Young joined the field recently, Akshay Bhatia. Got some major championship winners and Gary Woodland and Zach Johnson and Stuart Scott. A lot of winners this year on the PGA Tour are going to be playing. Chris Goddard, Robert McIntyre, Taylor Pendwith and Davis Riley are recent winners on tour. Jake Knapp, who'll be here for the first time, is coming, won earlier this year. And then a lot of household names, a lot of fan favorites. Joel Damon of Netflix fame, Kevin Kisner, Matt Kuchar, who I mentioned. Cam Davis recently joined the field, coming back to see if he can hoist a second Rocket Mortgage Classic trophy. Patrick Rogers. Of course, we got, Will Zalatoris, Tom Kim, Ricky Fowler already in the field. Some first-timers I mentioned, Minwoo Lee, Nikolai Højgaard, who won a Ryder Cup, who played in the Ryder Cup, is going to be competing as well. And then Francesco Molinari, who won a major a couple years ago at the British, is coming. And we're excited to have Webb Simpson back, along with a crop of young players too, right? Nick Dunlap, Miles Russell, the 15-year-old, is going to be making his PGA Tour debut as an amateur in the field this week. So it's the deepest and I think the funnest field we have in terms of the kinds of personalities and the breadth and depth of experience and youth that we've had in our 6 years of the Rocket Mortgage Classic.
And you know what I think will be really fun is to follow Ricky Fowler and see if he can win again this year. You know what I mean? Because he's such a great player and he's also a great guy and a lot of fun. So that's going to be a good storyline.
It's going to be a really good storyline, and he's excited to come back, obviously, and take a victory lap and maybe do it again. He's also excited. He's expecting his second. He and Allison are going to have their second child here in August, and I think it's Allison's, last time on the road before she goes back home to get ready for the birth of their second. So it's going to be an emotional week for him on a number of fronts, an exciting week, and I know he's excited to come back and take in a couple of Tigers games and see the fireworks on Monday. And all the players are excited to come, but especially Ricky. It's just such a big story. And fans that come out on Friday, the first 1,000 that get out here will be able to have a special orange Ricky Fowler hat to wear around to watch him, on cut day go around. And then, of course, on Thursday, we're excited to be honoring Nick Gilbert's memory again with Bowtie Day. And fans that come out will be able to receive a bow tie pin in his honor, and players will be wearing bow ties that day, and it's going to be a real special couple of days to get the event started.
And there is a wonderful charitable component to the Rocket Mortgage Classic. Can you talk more about that, Jason?
Well, yeah, a lot of fans don't know that all PGA Tour events are nonprofits, right? All of our proceeds go to supporting nonprofit organizations. Dan Gilbert's vision back when the event started was, how do we shine a bright spotlight on the city but find a way to impact the outcome? And we've been doing just that. Our mission is to end the digital divide here in Detroit through our Changing the Course initiative. We're aiming to provide access to the internet and any type of corresponding technology within a 10-minute walk of Detroiters' homes. And we've been able to do that. We started this initiative, and we had 9 tech hubs in the city. We got 22 tech hubs as we sit here today.
Wow.
With over 350 workstations, 30,000 residents across the 7 districts have accessed those. We've awarded almost 80,000 devices to the Detroit community and put a really strong digital infrastructure in place. And we started this initiative. We were the least connected city in the country, and now we have a nationally known digital inclusion model that's catching national news. And so the ecosystem's really stronger than it was in 2020, and a big part of that is allowing Detroit to take advantage of all these connection opportunities that we've been able to provide.
And Jason, this outing really helped create awareness that Detroit had this incredible digital divide. I had no idea until you started this and this outing became a big thing and we started talking more about the fact that so many people are without computers, without internet. It's amazing.
It really is amazing. And COVID is awful as it was, it was for many of us a moment of reflection. And it gave us a moment to sit back and take a look. And we did that as an event and said, look, if we're going to have the Rocket Mortgage Classic in 2020, which was on the table of not even having, if we're going to do it, we're going to take a look and see what are the unaddressed underlying issues in the city and find a way to impact that the most. And That moment of reflection brought us to realizing what you just said, which is that Detroit is the least connected city in America. COVID taught us having to be at home, the importance of being connected. And we made that our mission. Changing the Course launched in 2020. And it's been an incredible run since. But we're not there yet. And fans just need to know, when they're coming out here buying a hot dog, buying a T-shirt, buying something from the merch tent, buying a ticket, all of those efforts are going to support ending the digital divide in Detroit. And so they're not only going to come out here and have a great time entertaining themselves, they too are impacting the outcome here in Detroit.
Jason Langwell, Executive Director of the Rocket Mortgage Classic. We here at WJR are really looking forward to being out there all week covering this. Remind people again, how can we get tickets?
Yeah, fans got to get to rocketmortgageclassic.com. Tickets are on sale now. We're approaching sellout in a couple of our days, given our date window, but tickets are still available. Get there fast and get your tickets to come out and experience the best event of the summer here in Detroit.
Thanks for the time today, Jason, and have a great week.
Thanks, Ann. Appreciate it.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, June is Home Ownership Month. We'll find out more about that in just a few minutes. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit. You know, June is Home Ownership Month, so we thought it would be a good idea to check in with Shari Williams, the Director of Equitable Neighborhood Planning at Detroit Future City. Shari, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start out, first of all, and just have you explain to our listeners, what exactly is Detroit Future City?
Of course. Detroit Future City is a nonprofit organization. Our goal is to see a more equitable and sustainable city that works for everyone. So we're positioned as a think and do tank, which means we collect data and conduct research on issues facing Detroit and its people. We intend to inform policy and programming that will advance economic equity, and we convene stakeholders across the city and within the region as well to better coordinate and align our efforts to collectively work towards advancing economic equity in Detroit.
So since June is Home Ownership Month, we thought it would be a good idea to talk a little bit about that with you. What is the situation with regard to home ownership for Detroiters?
Yeah, wonderful question. So Detroit, first, let me start here. Home ownership has long been an indicator of economic stability. Across our country, it's a goal among many families to attain home ownership. And so we see that when it comes to economic equity, we see it as an indicator of economic stability as well. It's an opportunity to build wealth and transfer that wealth down to family members. But what we're seeing in Detroit is 20 percentage points lower rates of home ownership in comparison to the region.
Wow.
And that's huge to us. We see that as a huge challenge, particularly since the city of Detroit is made up mostly of people of color, right? And so that's where we really see that economic inequity. And so we want to lift the importance of home ownership. We want to celebrate where there are successful stories of home ownership and raise awareness to hopefully increase home ownership among Detroiters across the board.
So how can you do that? What are some of the steps that need to be taken?
That's a wonderful question. So at Detroit Future City, because we're positioned as a think and do tank, we collect our data. We put that data out through storytelling, through social media, through publications, and we're convening practitioners across the city to really think strategically around ways that we can foster home ownership, push this message forward, continue to tell the story. So this month, what we did, we used our convening power to partner with agencies that were doing work around home ownership. So Project Reach, for example, we partnered with them, and we were a part of a team that held a home buyer fair this month. There were over 600 attendees at that fair. It was amazing. During that event, participants were able to learn more about resources in the city for down payment assistance, home buyer education programs, and just really be engaged around what the process entails around home ownership. And then last week, also partnered with the Michigan Civil Rights Office for the Fair Housing event, where we talked about equitable housing initiatives and really lifted up the importance of having fair housing practices, both for renters and home buyers and homeowners. And then June 18th, we held, Detroit Future City held Juneteenth and Home Buyer Month celebration. And we went on tours and we actually showed residents and practitioners what affordable home ownership could look like. We highlighted various examples of projects in the Osborne neighborhood, Osborne community, and the Morningside community to really lift up not only the importance of home ownership, but where there are opportunities for themselves, or if you were a practitioner, for your organization to really push opportunities for people to attain home ownership.
So what are some of the barriers to home ownership for people in Detroit?
Yeah, that's a big one. Mm-hmm. There are so many challenges for potential home buyers. Many of them are tied to affordability. And I think anything I can point to, it would go right back to affordability. But in Detroit, Detroiters' median household incomes, they remain low in comparison to those in our region. And what we see is many in the region, we're seeing almost double the household median household income than what we see for Detroiters. So right there, that's already one challenge that sure. Detroiters are faced with, right? But then you think about, okay, we need to go through the process and you need to have down payment for purchasing a home. Tied right back to affordability. It makes it challenging for people to access that funds. And sometimes you even feel almost kind of pushed back from being able to step into that opportunity. Another thing is housing stock. There are many homes, but many of the homes, particularly in Detroit, need repair and they need work, right? And so I tie that right back to affordability as well. You may be able to attain an affordable home, but then you may not have the funds to invest in it to really bring that home up to your desires. And so many of those challenges are what we're seeing potential home buyers struggle with when wanting to attain home ownership.
The other part of the problem likely is it's kind of daunting to go through this process, right? Some people just may think to themselves, oh, this is too much work. I'm just going to rent.
Oh, my goodness, yes. And I can even speak from a personal experience.
Right, that's what I'm thinking.
I wanted to quit so many times. I'm just being honest. And I do think that's where, you know, having these community anchors are just so important. You have like Wayne Metro, for example, you know, just one example of an organization that is connecting with residents directly to provide home ownership training, the education and support. You know, I totally agree. It is a daunting process. It can be a daunting process, should I say.
Absolutely. So Detroit Future City is really working hard to come up with ways and to encourage people to at least look into the idea of buying a home, because once you're into the home, it's way cheaper to actually own the home than it is to keep throwing all that rent money away, basically.
I agree. And, you know, I will say we also recognize at Detroit Future City that home ownership may not be for everyone.
That's
some people
true.
Just
right.
really prefer to rent, and that's okay. You have that right to make that decision. We really want to see a city where everybody are able to meet their unique needs, right? We want to see people being able to prosper and make those decisions in a way where they can still flourish and just really enjoy their life. So while we do push for home ownership, we see it as an opportunity for economic stability. We recognize it's not for everyone. Everyone doesn't desire it, but we still want to see that everyone is able to still maintain their life and thrive in Detroit.
So what you're basically saying, Shari, is don't shy away from it. Don't think you can't do it. Look into all of these great options because they're out there.
Yes, definitely.
Shari Williams, Director of Equitable Neighborhood Planning at Detroit Future City, thank you for your time today, and thank you for the encouragement. It was great talking to you.
It was great talking to you as well, Anne. Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, we've got a great story about autonomous vehicles making a difference for the elderly and disabled in Detroit. We'll be right back after these messages. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit, brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. I'm Ann Thomas, and I am here now with Justice Richard Bernstein. Justice Bernstein was recently involved in a press conference with the City of Detroit as the city previewed AccessibilityD. That's an autonomous vehicle. Richard, welcome to the show. Isn't this interesting?
Well, Ann, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, this is a very big deal. This is something people should get very excited about. It's going to revolutionize transportation, and it's going to make life totally different for people with disabilities. This is a very, very powerful tool that's being used. And like I told people at the press conference, now when you see me behind the wheel, you don't have to freak out.
Well, tell us a little bit about how this works.
Well, the way it works is that ultimately the car drives itself. It is completely and wholly autonomous.
Wow.
The computer has sensors, and ultimately the car, it's just incredible. It will literally drive itself, and it will just come and will pick you up, and it will take you anywhere you want to go. And they have this operating in cities like Los Angeles and Phoenix and Miami, places of that sort. But in Detroit, we're catching up just because of the weather conditions, make it a little bit more complicated for the sensors and the computer to function the way it needs to. But this is something which is definitely coming. And they've opened up some corridors to use for shuttles, so that people can use this service all across the city. And what it's going to do is it's going to really open up life for people with disabilities and senior citizens and those who aren't able to drive. This is going to create an entire new way of life, an entirely new way of living for countless numbers of people who otherwise struggle to get to where they have to go.
Justice Bernstein, as someone who cares deeply about the rights of the disabled, this has to be very exciting for you to see that the city is doing something like this to make life so much easier for the disabled and for the elderly.
Yes, it is. I think this is a real big step forward. When it comes to accessibility and mobility, this is going to be transformative, and it's going to make incredible change for people who so desperately need it.
So now this service will have three autonomous shuttles, and the shuttles will operate all over the city. How exactly do you think it will work?
Well, they'll start with the shuttles, and they're going to operate in kind of certain areas just for the beginning.
Sure.
And then ultimately this is going to expand and continue to grow. And then really the whole plan is that, for all intents and purposes, that over the next couple of years, most cars are just going to be autonomous, so that, you know, the idea behind autonomous vehicles is that they're going to continue flowing and continue moving. And the concept will be that, you know, instead of ordering a taxi or an Uber, or even instead of having your own car, you're just going to order up an autonomous vehicle, and it's just going to come right to your house, take you to where you have to go, and then it will just move on to the next person.
It's so interesting. So you're not afraid at all. You know how some people are all worried about how autonomous vehicles will work, or they're afraid they won't work. But it sounds to me like you're game and you're good to go, and you think it's a great thing, especially for people that have special needs.
Well, and think of how many people die in auto accidents every single year.
Right.
Think of the number of people who are injured or killed in vehicular, you know, accidents. This is going to cut down on all of that. The biggest cause of death, one of the biggest causes of death, is auto accidents. And this is going to make things much safer for people. So this is going to, I think it's going to save countless numbers of lives, pedestrians, as well as bicyclists, as well as just, you know, individual cars that are having accidents. This is going to cut back on that dramatically. So it's going to make life safe for everybody. It's going to preserve and save lives. It's going to create freedom. It's going to create independence. And it's going to change literally the world as we know it.
Absolutely. Because right now there are so many people, elderly and the disabled, that really aren't able to get out and enjoy their lives because they don't have the right transportation, Richard Bernstein.
That's correct. And this is going to revolutionize that. And it's just going to open up all new corridors to people who otherwise don't have it right now.
So talk a little bit about your passion for helping the disabled and making sure that they are taken care of when they're out and about in society. What are some of the things that you have done for people in the past to make a difference in their lives?
Well, that's a very kind question. I mean, this has always been my entire life's work. And, you know, one of the things I focused on was accessibility and transit, which was making our city's bus systems accessible for people with disabilities. Stadiums and commercial facilities, making them accessible for people with disabilities where they at one time were not. Airlines, making airlines and aviation accessible and open to all those who wish to use it who have disabilities. Even road construction, like roundabouts, so that people who have disabilities can access them or use them or cross them. I mean, my entire life has been dedicated to creating accessibility, to creating openness, to allowing folks who otherwise kind of get left in the shadows to have a place in our society.
You know, it's funny, whenever I approach a roundabout, I think about you, Richard Bernstein, because you fought hard to make sure that that was changed and people paid attention to this, because for a while, people just went around and they weren't paying attention to the fact that some people, disabled people, need to cross there.
Right. And now what you'll notice is that most roundabouts have traffic control devices so that pedestrians can access them and then navigate the roundabout and cross it safely.
So in all of these different projects that you worked on, did you meet any opposition at first when you approached people saying, hey, we need to change this, we need to do this? Or was it more of a case of they just weren't thinking about the disabled in the way that they should?
A lot of times it was that people weren't thinking about it.
Right.
And then in certain situations, they were just worried about the cost. You know, the cost was, you know, so astronomical. So they were very concerned about the cost. And then usually what happens is once you kind of litigate and you really kind of focus on the issue, then people became friends. And in many situations, in all the cases that we worked on, people wanted to work together and do what was right. And they realized the good in it, they realized the benefit, and they realized it wasn't going to be that expensive. So in the beginning, you'd get a lot of opposition. But as time passed on, you would find that people would, you know, tend to put that opposition behind them and realize that this is for the good and they'd want to work together.
What are some of the areas in society that still need to be improved for the disabled?
I think you're always going to have transit, education, but the big one is job placement. Uh-huh. Job placement is a big deal. That, I think, is what affects most people with disabilities. I did a speaking tour with the Lieutenant Governor, Brian Kelly, and we traveled all across the state, and we were able to get employers to see the benefit of hiring people with disabilities and special needs. And that was an incredibly meaningful, worthwhile experience, because that really did make life better for the disabled. Because when you go to employment, that's where we have our biggest challenges, is getting people employed with disabilities. And being able to do that was something that really was of great benefit.
And with regard to that, was part of that trying to make sure that workplaces could accommodate the disabled and were doing the right thing for them?
It was more just showing the value of having a disabled person working in your organization. That if you have a disabled person working for you, that they have resilience, they have strength, they have endurance, they have passion and purpose. They're incredibly loyal and good workers, and they're the kind of people that would make a great employee if given the opportunity.
So it must be heartwarming for you to go to different places and see how they accommodate the disabled based on the fact that you were part of the story to make sure that happened. For example, you know, different stadiums or like the roundabouts. That must feel good for you to know that you were able to make a difference.
That hopefully life was made better for people. If you can look at something and realize that you made life better for another person, then that's what makes it worthwhile.
What were some of the comments that you got from people who deal with different disabilities?
Well, I think people appreciate the progress, and they appreciate that they're not being taken for granted, and they appreciate that they don't always have to live in the shadows. And I think that that's something that people ultimately really did appreciate over time, was the ability to kind of be a part and come under the fold and not have to always just be on the outside, but moreover, have a chance to be listened to and heard and be brought into the picture.
You know, it's interesting. It's really important to note that the city of Detroit, going back to this accessibility, they actually have an Office of Mobility Innovation that was part of this press conference. So it must be encouraging to you, too, to see different cities actually paying attention to how to help people get around.
It's wonderful. And Detroit's made this a priority. And they have all kinds of people working on this. And they've made this a wonderful priority for the city. And I think it's something which is going to be really impactful, and it's going to make a huge difference.
What would you say to other cities, businesses that may need a little bit more work in this area? How do they get started? Because sometimes for some people, some cities, some organizations, it could be daunting, to your point earlier, even the cost.
You just take it one step at a time and just do it one step, one motion at a time, and it will usually fall into place. You just have to take it, you know, just don't take it too much, too quickly, too fast, and get too overwhelmed. Just take it one step at a time, and you'll notice that it's not going to be that expensive, it's not going to be that difficult, and it's going to benefit countless numbers of people.
To this issue of it not being that expensive, the cost, it may initially require an outlay of a certain amount of money, but to me it seems like in the end it would pay for itself, and it would pay off tremendously in a lot of different ways, not just financially, but from a public relations perspective, Richard Bernstein.
It does. It does pay off in countless numbers of ways that basically, you know, you put in your initial investment, but then it becomes something that everybody can use, everybody benefits from, everybody can enjoy. And whatever you do that's good for the disabled is inherently and instinctively good for the disabled and senior citizens. So if you do a project and you make it so that it will benefit the disabled population, it will also have a profound impact on senior citizens. So you expand your market share tremendously.
Absolutely. Justice Richard Bernstein of the Michigan Supreme Court, we applaud you for your hard work with regard to the disabled and this project, Accessibility, making life better for the elderly and the disabled in and around the city of Detroit. Thank you for your time today. It was great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. And there's only good things happening, so we got much more to look forward to.
Absolutely. Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, we are going to talk about a groundbreaking for the city of Detroit, Henry Ford Health, Michigan State University, and the Pistons. We'll be back right after these messages. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit. Recently, there was a wonderful groundbreaking for the city of Detroit, Henry Ford Health, Michigan State University, and the Pistons, and it was for the new Henry Ford Health and MSU Health Sciences Research Center. Bob Riney, president and CEO of Henry Ford Health, was on JR Morning with Guy Gordon, Lloyd Jackson, and Jamie Edmonds. And I got to tell you, he was really excited about this groundbreaking. He says it was a great event.
In spite of really, really horrific heat, this outdoor ceremony was standing room only. We had hundreds of people come, and the energy was just palpable. People are really excited about not only what this research is going to do, but what we are doing to economic development in the city of Detroit and to job creation.
What I love, Bob, you know, one of the key focuses of the new research center is addressing health disparities, and it the place being right here in the city, right in the neighborhood. I mean, can you elaborate on the specific strategies and the research areas that is going to help close the gap in healthcare outcomes based on race and ethnicity?
Yeah, Lloyd, I'm glad you brought that up, because what excites all of us is there's going to be a population health strategy to the various research that goes on. So we'll be doing research in advancements and innovation in hypertension, in neurosciences, in cardiovascular. But to your specific point, the the focus is going to be on why outcomes are different depending on a number of factors, including gender, including race, including ethnicity. There are answers to that, mm-hmm. but the research hasn't been really focused on that historically. And what a better place. There is no better place than the Southeast Michigan community, which is so rich in diversity, both in the talent that will be doing the research and in the people that will benefit from it. So we're going to be focusing on what's called translational research, which means how do we create innovations and breakthroughs that can be immediately transferred into solving problems that communities face. And this healthcare disparity, I really think we have a chance of unlocking this for the country and maybe even for the world.
Yeah, huge.
You know, if you can sum up yesterday's event in one word, I think it's hope. Hope about, economic hope going forward, but also hope that some of these really intractable illnesses will no longer be dogging us the way they have.
You know, Guy, I used hope in my words yesterday because, you know, we're living in a time, unfortunately, when there's just a lot of things that zap the hope out of us. And research and its innovation, its ability to change lives is really the epitome of hope, to your point. And we are really excited. This is going to bring 80 new researchers to the community with their full teams. And a lot of these researchers, because of this building and because of the generosity of Dan and Jennifer Gilbert and focusing on things like neurofibromatosis, in addition to what I just mentioned, is going to attract researchers and their teams from around the world to relocate here. And then guess what? All of them are going to be of such a reputation that visiting researchers are going to want to come. So this has many layers to it from a success standpoint.
This $335 million facility is like the first brick and mortar representation of this big $3 billion investment. So it's like, what's next after this?
That's a great question. We're going to call this the year of shovels in the ground because in September, we will be having the ultimate groundbreaking for the new hospital tower, the new ER, the new ORs, et cetera. And that's going to be a really exciting day. And then we'll be having a groundbreaking for some of the housing that's going to be brought into the area under the Detroit Pistons partnership. And so it's going to be a year of groundbreaking, but also a year to celebrate the power of partnerships, because each of these entities is a partner. Henry Ford Health and the Pistons, Henry Ford Health and MSU, Henry Ford Health and the Gilbert Foundation. And two things I think are really worthy of calling out. The Neurofibromatosis Institute is going to be the first dedicated brick and mortar research institute in the country for neurofibromatosis. And, you know, that is really, really exciting for all of us. And we're also, because we've already combined our research with Michigan State, women's health, we are now the number one research entity in the country focused on women's health. So there's a lot for Detroit to be proud of.
What do you expect it to be done, Bob?
Well, if I had my way, it would be tomorrow. But my team tells me that that's just not possible.
All right, what's next then?
Yeah, we're looking at early 2027 for the research building. And then the new hospital complex, which is obviously, you know, much more extensive, will open in 2029. And so actually, in the way time flies, not that long from now.
Well, Bob, we're going to have to get you a shovel with your name on it because you're going to be doing a lot of groundbreaking ceremonies coming up.
Yeah, well, my wife has a shovel for me for the garden, but that's a whole other story.
That's Bob Riney, President and CEO of Henry Ford Health. And I'm Ann Thomas. Thank you for listening to Opportunity Detroit, and enjoy the rest of your day.